This is KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM and KGVM.org. We are the Health and Happiness Program presented every Monday evening at 7 p.m. and Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We thank the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee for being supportive of our program, and thank Bob Wall, station manager and DJ, who is the technical producer. We aim to involve the Gallatin Valley community in topics of health and happiness. One of the biggest contributions to health and happiness is recognition of those who provide safety, support, and protection to us. Dealing with that issue, Dr. Suzanne now introduces today's program.
What's that old saying? Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. And so that is why today I'm quoting Chuck Wynn, the guest columnist for the Bozeman Daily Chronicle on September 10th, 2024. He said, "This November, Bozeman residents will decide on two important ballot measures. One that would fund a first responder mill levy, and another for the construction of a fourth fire station. The last time we meaningfully added first responders was 2007. Since then, our population has grown by about 20,000 people, and the demand for public safety services has increased dramatically. You may have noticed the impact of having too few police officers on our streets. Maybe you've been the victim of a hit and run and have seen somebody blatantly run a red light or speed in a school zone, or have had your bike stolen or a car broken into with limited follow-up from the police. Our officers want to be able to solve your crime and to address reckless drivers, but they're often overwhelmed, moving from one emergency to the next. In fact, at times, there are as few as three or four officers patrolling the entire city. One officer will often field multiple emergency calls per hour, leaving little time for anything beyond responding to emergencies. Our firefighters face similar challenges. Response times are 4 minutes over the national average, and every minute counts when facing a growing fire or helping someone with cardiac arrest. The city continues to expand to the west and south, but still operates with only three fire stations, meaning firefighters are traveling further and often beyond their designated zones in order to respond to emergencies. That's why these issues are on the ballot. Funding the bond to construct a fourth fire station in the southwest corner of town, paired with the staff requested through the mill levy needed to run the station, will reduce response times and more effectively meet the needs of our growing city. With more officers, we can create a dedicated traffic unit, enable more proactive policing, and increase the ability to follow up with your cases. We'd create a safer Bozeman. Many of us do feel safe here, but our sense of safety is fragile and could change if we're unable to address these issues. Make your voice heard and vote this November." Well, we want to say that we are so happy to have with us two of those people who see to our safety and good health: Josh Waldo, chief at the fire station, and Jim Veldkamp, Police Chief. We really welcome you all to be with us here today and talk about these issues.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, and I'm sure that you're in full concurrence with Chuck Wynn's article. Josh, what would be your biggest concern on the issues coming up on this ballot?
Well, as the city has continued to grow over the last 20 years, we have lost the ability to have that effective response time that we want. And so when someone is having that medical emergency or they've had a fire in their home, it's taking us far too long to get there. We want to be there in 6 minutes or less from the time they call 911, but unfortunately today that has grown to closer to 10 minutes. And so the way we address that is with the addition of this fourth fire station and the staffing that is needed to run that station, as well as an additional unit called a quick response unit, which would be a pickup truck that could help answer a lot of our lower priority calls, keeping the fire trucks available for the more higher priority calls.
That sounds so valid and so truly needed. And we really can agree with you. That's paramount. Jim, could you talk to us about your most needed effort for the police department?
Our biggest need is simply to keep up with the growth of the city. You know, it's no secret that the city has grown exponentially over the years. With that comes more people, more calls for service, more cases we have to investigate, more miles of roadway we have to patrol. But we've not been able to keep up with the number of staffing, the number of officers that we need to sufficiently handle all that additional growth.
I hear you. We have a young friend who wanted to be a police officer here in town, and it was quite a long journey for him to be able to do that. Maybe if you could tell us, Josh, how one becomes a fire person here in Bozeman, what all the qualifications and hurdles are to do that. And then maybe, Jim, you could tell us the same information for a police officer.
Well, to become a firefighter, it starts with they have to obtain their emergency medical technician, or EMT. That's a prerequisite for the job here. In addition to that, they have to pass the candidate physical ability test. It's abbreviated to be called CPAT. Once they've done that, then they can apply. But we go through multiple steps in the hiring process. We'll do phone interviews. We'll do in-person interviews. And we're very selective about the people that we hire. And I know the police chiefs don't say the same thing. We're looking for high-quality people, high-character people, who are going to serve this community with a sense of pride and go take the extra steps to provide the service that the community expects and needs.
Absolutely. Are there age limitations for anyone out there who might be interested in seeking opportunities of this nature? What are some of the guidelines for who, in addition to those items, like are there age considerations? Can male or female apply? Tell us a little bit more about that, please.
The only age restriction is they must be 18 years or older to apply. And then, yes, absolutely. We have both male and female firefighters here in Bozeman. So really 18 years old, the EMT and the CPAT, and they can enter the hiring process.
And how long does the typical process take once they've applied?
Oh, it'll usually range a couple of months by the time we go through all the steps of the interview, phone interview, the in-person, making the selection, and then there's their physical exam, their psychological exam. So it is a very lengthy process. It takes several months.
So anyone out there interested in this occupation should make plans to spend a little time getting ready. Yeah.
Correct. It does take a while.
Jim, could you fill us in on that same information for police officers, please?
Absolutely. So our hiring process is about 6 months just to get hired. We start by gathering all the applications. We screen through them to look for the most qualified people. We do phone interviews. There's a physical fitness test, written test, a series of different oral interviews and practical scenarios. After that, they receive a conditional offer, meaning we want to hire them based on how their background investigation comes out, plus a full physical assessment. And once they finished all that and have gone before the police commission and gotten approval, then we hire them. And that entire process is about 6 months. Once that's done, it's about six more months of training. So they're just beginning once they get hired. But the people we're really looking for are those who can be a warrior within the community when things are going really bad. They can take charge and render a situation safe. But we also need people who can be the guardians of the community. We need people who can demonstrate empathy and compassion and communicate well with members of the community. So it's a tall order because we're looking for people with a wide variety of skills and the ability to adjust to whatever the call requires, which is part of the reason we have a hard time hiring police officers, is because we're looking for a very specific combination of skills, abilities, training, and experience.
And it sounds also for outlook that they really are looking to serve the community.
Absolutely. I think both our departments share that. The members of both departments are going to tell you that they got hired here to serve their community and to help people. And that's just a baseline of what we do.
And we couldn't appreciate any more how much that we all depend on what you all do. So Bozeman is a smaller city, but it's growing so rapidly. Jim, you could tell us about some of the major concerns of police officers right now.
So I guess overall, like I said, our major concern is keeping up with the growth. So when more calls come in from the community, when a call comes in for a theft or a bar fight or a domestic disturbance or a criminal mischief or reckless driving, those are all reactive calls, calls that we respond to when the community calls. As that happens, our ability to be proactive in the community, to enforce traffic laws, to be visible, to have a presence, to partnership with the community, to work with the community, all of that starts to diminish. And what we're looking for and our biggest concern is to be able to continue to provide the high level of service that our residents deserve and have come to expect, and not have that sense of safety slip away as officers just run call to call to call. And especially as they sometimes are prioritizing emergency calls and critical incidents, which means the other calls don't appear as important to us.
And yet that's not the case, but there's not much that can be done about that.
And that's the reason for this mill levy. Our officers want to be able to spend sufficient time on each call. They want to be able to solve crimes that people report to us. And so it's equally frustrating to the officers when they don't have the time and capacity and bandwidth to be able to do that. And that's really what we're looking for, is sufficient investigatory time, having enough officers to respond appropriately to every call and to do it in a timely manner. That's extremely important. That's what our community has asked of us, and that's the level of service we want to be able to provide.
Also, we had Stacy Zinn, who at that time was the statewide coordinator for drug problems within Montana, and she was saying that you also deal with much very serious problems, and that even in recent days, cartels and others have come into town, and that the drug situation has made it especially difficult.
Yes. So we are certainly seeing increased drug usage and drug distribution in the community. sometimes those types of crimes are things that are not as visible to community members. So we often mention the fact that it's easy to spot someone driving recklessly or running a red light, and we get calls about that because the community wants us to do something about that. But what the community doesn't see as often are some of the bigger crimes, the crimes that only affect certain people, and whether that's substantial financial scams or human trafficking or drug use and distribution. All of those types of crimes are also increasing in town. And so we want to have capacity to investigate those properly, just like we want to be able to investigate things like reckless driving. But Stacy is correct. We're certainly seeing more drug use, the availability of more drugs in our community as our population grows.
And I think that also affects the emergency medical personnel, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah, we see the impacts of drugs on the fire department as well, just from the standpoint of the number of calls that we go on that are drug-related and the impacts. You know, the medications that we give, known as Narcan, to reverse the effects of some of these drugs, they no longer are working. The drugs are just so much stronger than they've been in the past that no matter how much Narcan we're giving some of these individuals, it's not having the effect that it used to.
Oh, that's concerning. Yes, we have a son-in-law who's an emergency room physician, and his phrase is, time is tissue, so that somebody having like a stroke, an aneurysm, whatever that, or heart attack, the tissue is being destroyed every minute. And so when you talk about 4 to 6 to 8 to 10 minutes, that is a huge number for those people experiencing those kinds of situations, would you say, Jim?
Yes, absolutely. It's important that both our departments be able to respond quickly. So there are times right now when a medical call comes up that police officers would respond to if they didn't have another call going on, if they're in the area. But when they're on their way to a domestic disturbance, they have to prioritize and go to the domestic disturbance, knowing that the fire department is going to respond to the medical call.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. little bandwidth and capacity and more staffing on both departments would allow us a quicker response regardless of the type of call.
Which explains why you see the question as a joint effort between police and fire, in that we work together day in, day out on a number of different calls. And if PD doesn't have the staffing that they need, it impacts the fire department's ability to respond. If fire doesn't have the staffing that we need, it impacts police. So that's why we're running this as a first responder mill levy to hopefully help both agencies.
I would hope that the mill levy provides additional pay to the service that you fellows do. How does Bozeman compare with other cities on its pay scale?
When we do pay scales, we look at other cities across not just the state of Montana, but really the entire Northwest region, because we want to make sure that we are competitive and attractive. We want to continue to draw good candidates, and we want to keep those good candidates. So every time we go into contract negotiations to evaluate pay, that's the first thing we do is we compare ourselves with others across the region to see, you know, how we measure up.
Also wanting to know, on the calls that you get, is there a kind of a priority? Well, not a priority, but those calls that you get that are most often, how would you rank those? Is there a 1, 2, 3? Most often you get called for what sort of thing?
From the fire side, medical stuff or EMS is still our predominant call. We do that about 60% of the time. Outside of that, it's a mix. Smells of gas or gas leaks in the community, false alarms where people have burnt food or some other reason has activated their fire alarm. Fires are actually the least in terms of what we do as a fire department here.
I think that's something people ought to know. They're thinking, well, people in the fire department, they just have to wait around until there's a fire. No way. It's many other things.
Yeah, that is correct. I would say that over the year, a calendar year, less than 2% of what we do is fire related.
And we've had officers and first responders and fire persons on this program previously. And the topic at that time had to do with the huge amount of stress that they come into, for instance, when they see so much disarray and so much illness and many tragic things. And so a big concern of ours has been, how do they maintain their equilibrium and their sound mental health? And I'm sure the stress of being shorthanded and not being able to be the typical way they would with a full complement even adds further stress to a very stressful job already.
Yeah, you're completely correct. So as officers and firefighters go from call to call to call, it becomes increasingly difficult for them to be able to process that call. Speaking for the police department, we have critical incidents happen where someone may see a fatality or someone injured. They see horrific things that community members might see once in their lifetime. And for the officers, as soon as they're done with that call, they go back to their car and they look at the next call and they head to that call. And that's not okay. And what both our departments and the city of Bozeman as an entity is trying to do is slowly increase and add more wellness opportunities. We have a wide variety of things we do in our department that we slowly added throughout the years to make sure we're taking care of our people. And the main reason we want to take care of our people is not only to keep them here, but to keep them healthy, because they can serve the community better. So if we take care of our people, they can take care of the community.
So there's really a very important element of emotional behavioral support. I would guess not only for your personnel, but for the families of the officers and the firefighters.
Yeah, that's correct. And not only do we do the critical incident stress debriefings, we have peer support teams here within both police and fire, so that when members are struggling or their family members are struggling, we have resources internally to help. And then there are other avenues that we can reach out to if it's something that's a little bit beyond the team's capabilities.
That's significant. I'm so glad you have those support systems. And I think, too, we need to be concerned with this bill coming up that we're going to be voting on. Could you make sure, sometimes there's a confusing bill, how is the question stated on the ballot, do you know? So we want to make sure people out there know what it says and exactly how to respond.
So I don't have the exact language, and it'll be a little lengthier, but I'll summarize it. There'll be two questions on there. One would be to authorize a mill levy to hire 38 police positions and 25 fire department positions. The second question would be a bond to fund the construction of a fourth fire station. So there'll be two separate questions on the ballot. We can't tell people which way to vote. We can only answer questions and provide facts so the community understands what the questions are related to.
2007 was the last time we meaningfully added first responders. Now, that's quite a while ago.
The city population has grown by about 51% since 2007. That's our best estimate. So, yeah, that's a lot more people, a lot more activity, a lot more things we need to respond to. And so this would be a step towards being able to handle that. I did just want to emphasize that the firefighters and police officers would be hired over 5 years. So for our department, for example, it would authorize us to hire six officers per year for 5 years. And we're doing that because we recognize we need to grow as the community grows. We can't just have one huge bump, and I don't think it'd be best for the organization or the community to do it that way. So this mill levy would be spread over 5 years.
I have some questions about just specific things that happen, may be happening, to get the information from you. We oftentimes read about trafficking, like human trafficking. Does that really affect this area?
Yes, it does. In fact, our detectives put together an operation last year, and I believe they arrested 18 people during one weekend. And so it absolutely happens here. Each case is a little bit different. There are varying levels. There are very different variables in each case that change the circumstances in each one, but it absolutely does happen here. And I think community members, we want people to have a sense of safety in this community, but sometimes that comes at the expense of understanding and being aware of what actually still does go on in this community.
And when you stop to think how much work and tedious effort went into finding those people, setting up that operation, and following through, that took a whole lot of manpower, I'm sure.
It does. It takes a lot of bandwidth and capacity, but crimes like that are something that are important enough that we just need to make sure we're putting appropriate resources to that. What we want to be able to do now is expand the resources we're able to commit and dedicate to a wide variety of issues in town, including things like traffic, so just so we can appropriately address all of the community's concerns.
Is there a place anywhere in either of these organizations for volunteers? And if so, what could citizens volunteer to do? And if not actual volunteering on site, what other ways can the community members reach out and help the fire and police department?
So we do have a volunteer program in the police department. We have volunteers that perform a wide variety of duties, from department photographer to people that pick up and run equipment back and forth, like pick up uniforms, handle abandoned bikes. We've had a wide variety of volunteers in the past, so we are always looking for people willing to volunteer and help us out. Generally, those are office duties, so they're things that, you know, a specific duty or task that we want someone to be able to perform. Outside of that, one way people can certainly help us is become knowledgeable. So whether that's doing a ride-along with a police officer to see what actually goes on, or possibly even attending our Citizens Police Academy, which is coming up soon, that's a great way just to become aware of the police department and what we do in this community. And it allows people to actually speak and tell their friends and neighbors, well, here's what I learned. Here's what actually goes on. Here's what the police officers are like that I met. They're not what you see on TV. They're actually out working, serving their community each day. So that's another good way, is to just become involved with us, attend something, one of our public events or the Citizens Police Academy, and be able to share with neighbors and friends what you learned.
That's intriguing. Citizens Police Academy, where we can become informed citizens contributing. So do you know about when that would occur?
Yes, I believe our next one starts the end of this month. So it runs for about 6 weeks on Thursday nights. I think this year it's going to be from about 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And the first night is more of an informational session where you kind of learn about the size of the department, get a tour of the department, you hear from the chief, the deputy chief, and some captains. But then after that, the goal is to get people out moving around so they can learn about evidence, and they can conduct fake traffic stops to see what it feels like from a police officer's perspective. They get tours of the 911 center and the jail or detention center, learn about how our detectives go about solving crimes. So just a wide variety of things. And I've never heard somebody say they regret attending the Citizens Police Academy.
That reminds me, too, of something Stacy Zinn had mentioned, that if you are informed and knowledgeable, you can pick up on things that you might otherwise totally miss, like maybe there's a drug house nearby, and what are the signs of a drug house? How would you know, and how would you report that to the police? And she gave some very interesting guidelines for watching out for those sorts of things within our community. Is that something that might occur at the Citizens Police Academy?
Absolutely. And if it's not something that we talk about, it's a great opportunity to ask those kinds of questions. So Stacy is correct. One of the big things we want is citizens and community members to be good witnesses, right? If you see something, say something specific. Tell us exactly why that house is of concern. If you see a crime take place, don't just remember it was a white car, but try to figure out the license plate if you possibly can, or details of what the driver looked like. So that's another great way to help us, is to just to be a good, aware community member.
And we had an experience with something that happened downtown Bozeman, and we were called to be a witness. And we went to do that to the police station, and every single person that we met was cooperative, congenial, good communication skills, and what we saw was also kindness. And so we'd like for people to know there's in general, sometimes certain groups have a fear of policemen, police women. And I don't think anyone needs to fear our police persons. Could you kind of talk with us about that?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I said a little bit ago that everybody in both of our departments got hired to do this job because they want to help people. It takes a servant's heart to do any of the jobs in the police department or the fire department. And I think certainly in the police department, people have perceptions sometimes of one bad involvement they had. Usually, I can say it's from other communities and not here, or what they've seen on television. And once they do meet us and see that we're just a bunch of normal people who want to help our community, who just have very unique jobs, it often changes their perception, and they realize that some of their preconceived notions certainly aren't true.
That's so good to hear. Another issue that comes before both the fire and police departments is mental health, suicide rates, people having episodes, and that shouldn't be within what you all have to do, but it falls under your umbrella, doesn't it?
It does. It's one of the more rapidly occurring type of events that we do have to deal with here in our community. Often the mental health has some kind of underlying issue, whether that's a post-traumatic stress event, substance abuse, or something else. So, yes, we are seeing that more and more here in our community that we're having to deal with as responders.
And so here's a very disturbed person who needs medical attention, most likely, and you're having to sort out whether this is truly a person who's a threat to the community right now or just needs help, and how to disperse this situation. So that puts a lot of pressure on our police and fire persons to figure out what's actually going on, I would imagine.
It does, and that's why it's so important that our crews work together. We need our friends from the police department to help us to make sure that everyone's safe as we try to figure out what's going on with this individual, so that we can provide them with any medical care that we need. But in the end, both our departments are just looking to get the individuals the help, the assistance, and the services that they need in the safest manner possible.
How do you all interact with the help center?
I'm glad you asked that. So one of the tools that we have is the Gallatin Mobile Crisis Unit. These are first responders who are also essentially they respond with us to try to deal with mental health issues that are more appropriate for them to respond to than police officer or firefighters. So currently, there are two crisis responders who work 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day of the week. And we hope as the program sees success, we'll see increased staffing. But they are housed here at our facility, and they listen to our radio, and they also have our computer system so they can see the calls. And what they do is they actually physically respond to the scene and go in with us if it's safe. If not, they'll wait down the street until we ensure that nobody is a danger, because, you know, routinely we have people threatening themselves or someone else with a knife or a gun, and we can't allow people just to go into that scene. But they wait, and then at appropriate time, they come in and try to provide whatever mental health services they can. If appropriate, the officers and firefighters leave. Other times we're still involved longer. And the goal is to really connect these people with local resources. And they also follow up with them later, all with the goal of trying to prevent people from getting back into that crisis state. So hopefully we reduce the number of times that our departments have to respond, and we actually get people the help they need rather than responding and dealing with them and just doing that repeatedly. The involvement with the Help Center is that there is a crisis line, 988, which we even have on our patrol cars next to 911. 988 is a crisis line that people can call if they just need to talk to someone or are feeling themselves getting into a crisis. Those calls are answered by the Help Center, who basically dispatches the mobile crisis folks directly.
That's great. I would think, too, that having this kind of interaction reduces those incidences that occasionally one sees on television or listens to about someone who's mentally ill, who, of course, they're acting violent maybe at the time, but it stops a tragedy from, let's say, an autistic person, a schizophrenic person, someone going through a psychotic episode with a substance, from being perhaps injured or killed. The mental health people, I would feel, would de-escalate or hopefully have the skills to de-escalate those situations.
That is exactly the goal. The less times our departments have to respond, obviously the less resources it uses, but even more importantly, we can offer a better, more appropriate response by individuals who have more training in this area, and we connect them with resources so they don't get into that crisis, which could cause our departments to respond again and ultimately could lead to a dangerous situation for everybody involved.
Yes. Several years ago, we had Glenn Close and her sister on the show talking about, and this isn't a police or fire department problem in one way, that if somebody was a mental health risk of suicide or danger to others, that there wasn't a place in Bozeman for them at night, and that the police officer on that show said that they sometimes had to drive one of these people all the way to Helena in order to place them in a facility where they could stay 24 hours. Has that situation improved?
Not substantially. I appreciate how you both introduced that it really isn't a police or fire department issue. It's a community-wide issue.
Yes.
And these are certainly especially mental health issues, and the facilities and the resources that we offer, how we go about that is really a community-wide issue. I know there is a coalition right now that is working on this, and it involves a wide variety of nonprofits, community groups, and some people, for example, from our departments. But you're right, it's a community wide problem that deserves a community-wide answer. And I'm sorry to say that at this point, we just haven't really reached the point where we have adequate services. So I hope we're able to continue working on and solving these issues. Sometimes what happens is police departments and fire departments become the social agency of first resort, meaning people don't know who else to call, so they just call us. And we both believe that we need to have appropriate responses to appropriate types of calls. And so hopefully we can continue offering and providing more services as a community for those who need these kinds of services.
On a positive note, we did have a couple of months ago the team from Bozeman Health who are trying to provide 24-hour care for those who are having a mental health crisis. And it's being built, and hopefully it won't be too long before we'll have that availability. So let's really hope and support that effort by Bozeman Health.
Yeah, that would be a great addition to our community. And it'll address the current challenges, but we know there's always going to be something new that's coming down the pipe for us to have to prepare for in the future.
I know that they've been working on, the group has been working on this issue, not just recently, but for years. And I really hope this group will finally get it done. I know their intentions are good, but we'll see here in the coming 6 months or so. I had some just a variety of questions. How do you deal with people? There's so many people in today's world, some of them just for their own self-aggrandizement. They like to record the police and emergency personnel doing things. How do you feel about those who stand around and record what you're doing?
For the police department, we fully expect it. So we even have policies in place that describe and guarantee the public's right to record us. I can tell you that when I started as a police officer many years ago, that just wasn't a thing, right? People didn't have a phone in their pocket. But we tell our officers how to handle those situations. People can't interfere with what the officers are doing. But as long as they're standing a reasonable distance away and recording, they are fully allowed to do that. We do have people routinely tell the officers, just, you know, I'm recording you. And the ironic part of that is the police officers are all wearing video cameras on their chest as well. So not only are the citizens recording the incident, but we're recording it from every patrol car and every police officer anyway. So it really should not and better not change the officer's behavior or how they approach a situation. If they're handling a call exactly like they should, and that is how by far the vast majority of our calls are handled, then it's really the public's right to do that, and shouldn't be of any concern to us.
And actually, when we happened to be downtown, I mentioned, and we saw the conflict occurring, we did use our phone cameras and record that. And when we were called into the police station as witnesses, that became very valuable because it fully supported the actions of the officers. So the citizens out there need to know they can record on behalf of the police as well as for other concerns.
Absolutely. And honestly, a lot of the times it's just part of being a good community member and a good witness is to help document what you saw, especially if we haven't arrived yet. And you're right, officers will often ask if they can obtain a copy of the video because it's very, very helpful in court.
I wanted to ask from a fire person's perspective and a police perspective, so maybe some top 10 or 3 or 4 things in your areas for citizens for their own safety. What can we do and habits we can change would be driving in our households, habits that we have to make things safer for us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, just some general safety tips when you're talking about being at home. We're always going to tell folks from the fire department perspective, make sure you have working smoke alarms. Those are critical. You should have one inside of every sleeping area and then directly outside of every sleeping area. In addition to that, you should sleep with your doors closed. Those doors have the ability to prohibit smoke or fire from entering the room. It's not a permanent fix, but it will buy you minutes until the fire department can arrive. And then have a plan. What are you going to do if your smoke alarms go off at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're sound asleep? If you've never thought about this, practice this, just think that at 2 a.m. you're going to be able to put this plan in motion. It's not going to work out very well. So, for the home, have those working smoke alarms, close those doors in the rooms, and make sure you have a plan that you practice ahead of time.
Very good.
I've noticed in our house, and maybe true in others, let's say we did that, and then you're kind of trapped. You can't go through that direction for some reason. The windows don't seem to be to open that easily. Should one have a plan for how to break that window or get it open to get out?
Well, that's why we encourage you to figure out through practicing your plan ahead of time if the window doesn't work or if it's difficult to open, and try to remedy that. If you can't remedy the window for some reason, that closed door will buy you a tremendous amount of time. And honestly, the more doors that you can put between you and a fire, the better off you are.
That's a very valid thing, and I think most of us don't think that way. It's a good tip.
What about protection security issues from a police person's point of view?
A few basic things I would say is first of all, as you're driving, just slow down and take a moment. I shouldn't say it makes me laugh, but it's always ironic to me when I see people driving too fast, swerving through traffic, not being courteous drivers, and then I come up to a red light and I stop right next to them anyway. So,
so true.
Didn't help them very much.
I see that all the time, and it just doesn't make that much of a difference. So slow down and drive courteously. At least for me, it surely enhances the feeling of peace and safety in a community when people are driving cordially.
Absolutely.
Second, I would say lock your cars and lock your house. Our officers take theft calls, especially from cars, on a daily basis and are routinely asked by whoever's reporting it, have you ever seen this happen before? And when the officer just took another report of the same thing 10 minutes ago,
yeah.
You can only imagine how frustrating it is when we see this kind of activity over and over and over because people aren't taking the simple steps of at least locking their own car, because whoever is checking door handles is probably just going to go on to the next car. They're not going to take the time to smash the window out and break into your car. So just take that simple step, which is a deterrent. Same thing for your house. So we do have burglaries that occur. But another issue, for example, is every once in a while, someone who's had too good of a time at the bars or at a party will wander into the wrong house.
Oh.
And by simply locking your doors, you can prevent that from happening. And I would say the next thing is to be a good witness. That's definitely something that I know I mentioned that a couple times before, that's something else I would ask of people, be a good witness. Offer assistance if you see something happening. Offer assistance if you possibly can. We routinely have people drive by a situation and call it in but not stop to help. Well, if you can stop to help, great, but at least they're taking the time to call it in and report it to us. Then finally, I would say don't give out your personal information. That's probably one of the biggest crimes we see that people don't expect. They'll receive a phone call from their bank or supposedly from the police department, and they give out too much personal information and they've just gotten scammed.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I was wondering, what about pedestrians and bicycles in the city? It seems to me they may be at an increased risk.
Yes, they absolutely are. We do see injuries and bad accidents with bikes and pedestrians. But there's responsibility not only for the drivers, but at times for the cyclists, right? So cyclists need to obey traffic laws just like a car. They can't just go through red lights and ride on the wrong side of the street. And they need to behave just like a vehicle would. And for pedestrians, we just encourage that people watch their surroundings. Be a defensive pedestrian and be aware of the dangers around you, Make sure you're walking in an appropriate, safest possible place to at least decrease the chances that something terrible is going to happen.
The proliferation of the electric scooters and bikes that are rented, is that an issue, or is that not really a problem?
You know, it has been an issue. It seemed like a couple of years ago when they first came out, we had even more of them in town. We do certainly see issues with them. I think as people get even more, you know, I'm talking about the electric scooters, but as people get electric bikes and those the one wheels, the electric skateboard looking ones, these things are going faster and faster all the time. And I'm afraid we are going to have more bad incidents with them. I can tell you our public works department, our transportation folks, are constantly looking and considering better alternatives and better changes, things we could improve and change to make bikes and pedestrians and overall traffic safety improvements.
I really appreciate that effort, because that it always seems so scary to see a bicycle in the midst of deep traffic. Yeah.
I've noticed there's been reports more than once, maybe several times, of wrong-way drivers, for example, on the interstate. Is that always related to drinking too much?
I don't have the stats. I would say routinely it is. There are times when it's not. It could be someone who's really confused. We also do see people experience medical issues from time to time, and that leads to a traffic crash. But it is very common, especially late at night where we see people on the wrong side of the freeway. So there, too, what people can do is be more vigilant. Don't just be staring out your windshield just in front of your car, but be looking farther ahead and anticipating those kinds of dangers and almost expecting that it's going to occur so that you have a plan of what you're going to do in case it does occur.
I know that sometimes you don't know what to call in, when to call, whether it's somebody acting up in traffic. A couple of years ago, we saw a young, maybe late teen, early 20s man on an electric skateboard going down the sidewalk carrying a very tiny infant. And it just looked so precarious and so frightening to think of that fragile infant being carried that way and not knowing what else to do. We called the police, and they were so helpful. And our understanding was that they went out and spoke with that young man about the dangers thereof. So I guess I was looking for guidelines about when is it time to call the police.
Usually what we tell people is when the hairs on the back of your neck stand up.
Yeah, that was one of those.
Trust those instincts. At times you have people that just try to dismiss what they saw, and other people that call in way too often for something that really doesn't need to be called in. But I think most of us know when we see a situation and it just doesn't feel right, or there's something about it, even if you can't really place your finger on it, that seems like something you should call in. We encourage people, just call it in.
Thank you.
There's the possibility, one like that, we may have gotten 8, 10, 12 calls on that. But we'd rather have that than everybody assuming someone else made that call, and then it turns out nobody made that call.
Mm-hmm. We have a few minutes remaining. What have we not covered? Things that you all wanted to say that we haven't even hit upon yet?
No, I think this has been pretty comprehensive. I think what we want people to know and understand, and Chief, kind of alluded to this, is get to know your departments, your police departments and your fire departments. Know what we do. Know what the struggles we face are. And then that just gives you the information to share with others in the community. So when they're asking, because we're asking people, for a lot of positions here, we're asking for another fire station, and we want people to have the facts. And so it's great to have an opportunity like this to come on and talk about just the day-to-day operations of our organizations and what our people face.
One issue I just realized that we haven't hit, and we have two or three minutes to at least talk about it. We have, it appears to be maybe increasing homelessness. I know HRDC deals with it very well. Is there any, how do you guys deal with homelessness?
So at this point, we have a separate division called Neighborhood Services that has primary responsibilities for dealing with issues centered around urban camping. Coming up next month, the Bozeman City Commission is going to relook at the current city ordinance, and they'll take staff input and what staff is seeing and presumably provide some guidance and direction from there. And we'll put that into our plans and how we respond and how we address that issue. For our department, we will just continue responding to someone in urban camping exactly like we will to someone in a residence. We respond to a wide variety of calls involving a wide variety of people. And so from our side, Neighborhood Services deals with the ordinance involving urban camping. But our officers respond to calls involving the drugs or domestic disturbances, suspicious activity, a wide variety of other incidents or crimes that may occur, just like they respond to anyone else in town.
And it's a very similar approach from the fire department. Doesn't matter if it's in a single-family residence or in an urban camping situation, if someone's having a medical emergency or some kind of a problem, we're going to respond and mitigate that and provide the services that they need. Because, you know, when someone calls 911, they're literally having the worst day of their life, most likely. And so doesn't matter the situation that they're in, we're going to show up and try to help them make this a little bit better.
I know that police officers and fire persons don't get to stay home when COVID starts, or if there's ice thick everywhere, or if it's 90 degrees. They are out there for us every day and every night. And I thought of something, I was reminded that it's been too long, but at one point we took down a whole big bunch of pizzas to the fire station. And so how about baking cookies? I just think each of us as a citizen could think of a way to show gratitude and approval and support for those who keep us safe every day, all night, all day.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'll tell you that one of the things that goes probably the longest or the furthest with a lot of our folks is when you see them out in public, just thank them. Just a simple thank you for what they're doing, for being out there providing the service. That can be the moment that turns their day around if they're having a long shift. So just a simple thank you.
We shall do that.
We thank you so much for talking to us today on KGVM Bozeman 95.9. We'd like to also tell you that you can go to the internet, kgvm.org, and listen to the program as many times as you wish after it is uploaded. And thank you again to the fire people and the police people for being on today. This is KGVM. See you next time.